morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We're talking about drug policy today with David Brushwood, who has a unique background, right, Mike?
Yeah. No, this is going to be a good show. Big Pharma, we're going to take on Big Pharma with Dave Brushwood, a pharmaceutical knowledgeable professor.
And he has a law degree, so he combines legal expertise with expertise in pharmacology. This is a complex subject and an extremely irritating one when you look at the drug prices in the United States.
You know, people need these things to survive. You know, and this game is played. And, you know, and this is the subject of today's show. And certainly, there's lots to talk about. But that this game is played between profit and health is the rest of the world doesn't understand it as why the United States does this so to such a degree. I guess the rest of the world does it too, but we do it to a
lot of places.
Degree.
They set the prices of drugs. The government does. What was interesting? I was telling Dave before the show started, because we knew Dave long before we knew he was a distinguished professor and great expert.
We thought he was
some guy,
a bar girl down at Vino.
Yeah, we did some stuff with pharma. I did a search for overpriced drugs and that on Google, and I ended up with a whole bunch of investment sites encouraging people to invest in companies who have overpriced drugs. What's going on, Dave?
They did warn us last night on Elementary not to get your medical information off your phone, by the way. I just thought I'd mention that. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. Well, yeah, this is really an interesting subject. Most of the other developed nations have a single-payer system for health care. So the single payer says, here's the deal. Here's what we're going to pay you for your drugs. Take it or leave it. And the supplier, the drug company, says, yeah, well, we don't like that. So at least they're in a negotiation posture. At least there's some ammunition that the buyer has in what we call a monopsony, when there is a single buyer who can say, yeah, well, here's the deal. Not buying your product if you don't meet my price. We don't have that. We don't have a single payer system. We have multiple payers. We have multiple buyers. And so the bargaining power is not as great here in the United States as it is in the other developed countries. But you mentioned, Steve, the website. I haven't seen that. Don't need to raise my blood pressure by going there and seeing it. What they're looking for is underpriced single-source generics. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for drugs like Daraprim that Martin Shkreli's company found. They are generic drugs. They're at a low price. They're off patent. And it's just not worth it to more than one company to market these drugs. So since they're single source, these hedge fund managers see the company and they say, we're going to buy this product from you. And then they increase the price like 5,000%.
5,000%. And that's not an exaggeration, right?
No. That's the truth. With Daraprim, which is a life-saving drug to treat toxoplasmosis. And we remember the hearings at which Shkreli was so dismissive and sarcastic and certainly didn't do himself any favors and didn't do the pharmaceutical industry any favors. But what it causes us to understand is we need to find some solutions to these underpriced single-source generics that, because they're priced so low, just aren't worth it to multiple companies to market. So a single company takes them on and then gives up their right to the product to an unethical hedge fund manager like Martin Shkreli. And there are some solutions. One would be to speed up the approval process of generic equivalents of competing drugs. Competition is the solution. It's because they're single source. that we have their off-patent single-source drugs. So let's increase competition. And right now there's a three-year backlog in the approval at the FDA of generic drugs.
I think people don't know that, Dave, that generic drugs have to be approved by the FDA and that there's a huge backlog. I think it's several thousand drugs or hundreds and hundreds of drugs. They're just backlogged, and they're generics that would cut the price of drugs for you folks. But there's such a backlog and there's such underfunding of the FDA that they can't get around to deciding whether they're legitimate and should be authorized.
The name
right?
of the show is Democratic Perspective, and so we like to look at things from a political side. So I like to blame the Republicans for everything, except I believe in this case we can blame the Democrats share some blame. As far as I'm concerned, we've already come up with a solution, and that is single payer solves a lot of problems. So we can talk more about that later on in the show. But the idea that the Republicans protect the profitability of big pharma, of these pharmaceutical companies, is the unconscionable thing that people deal with. Those 84%, I think we were talking before, that believe, 84% of Americans that believe drug prices are too high, and we don't know why the other 16% don't, but that they're kept artificially high for profitability is just... And that's one of those visceral things. That's not American. That's un-American.
I'm afraid that Democrats are also responsible industry in the United States is concentrated in New Jersey, Massachusetts, and California, all Democratic states where they are pouring money. Some of this stuff, folks, is so arcane that you'll never see it. It's like a sleight of hand how they get the drug pricing. But I think, Dave, tell us there's a big difference in how drugs behave, whether they're we call them generic. You call the correct term is off patent and on patent drug. So what's the difference, and why is this important to drug pricing? And are there different problems with off patent and on patent drug?
Yeah, well, of course, the difference is there's a monopoly that's granted to the patent holder of a particular drug. That monopoly lasts for 20 years. Oftentimes, the monopoly begins, the 20-year clock begins running when the drug is first discovered, not when it is marketed. So there is going to be something less than 20 years of marketing time, and they have to recover their profit. I don't think anybody would disagree that drug companies have a right, as does any business, to a reasonable profit. Now, in my view, what they are doing, many of them, is earning an unreasonably high profit rather than a reasonable profit. I mean, billions of dollars rather than millions of dollars, which many businesses would be happy to earn.
Now, Pfizer, $140 billion. $140 billion. One drug company.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's huge profits that the patented medications earn for their companies. Now, there are some ways to approach that, and not all drugs are the same. There are a variety of things that are already being done. One of them is in various ways through the VA or through Medicaid, requiring that rebates be paid.
Uh-huh.
The problem with rebates is it's a discount off an artificially way higher than is necessary price.
It's like the 10% the 10% off of the car that's, you know, price that they bumped up the price 25%.
Except they bumped up the price of the drug 250% rather than 25%. Yeah.
And then they give the VA and Medicaid a 20%
off or something.
20% off.
Yeah. I mean, great. Thanks a lot. I mean, now some of the drugs, there's another thing that we need to talk about, and it's not just cost, but cost effectiveness. Hmm. Some drugs are very cost effective in the sense that they replace the need for surgery, or they replace the need for other drugs that would need to be used for a lifetime but can cure a disease in 12 weeks. Now, we would pay that for a shirt or a car that is much more valuable than a less valuable shirt or a car. The problem is trying to tell the difference. Which car is going to last me 20 years rather than 5? Which shirt is going to last me 10 years rather than 2? Which drug is cost-effective rather than not cost-effective? And there are pharmacoeconomists who actually specialize in that. They spend their careers doing that. We have the ability to do that. We can discover that. What they do is they use a measure called quality-adjusted life years, QALY, Q-A-L-Y. Quality-adjusted life years, and they determine whether some drugs warrant higher prices because they're of greater value than our other drugs. Now, the problem is we have this, well, we talked about this system. We have the drug pricing gap, we call it, because we have some government programs that say you must cover pharmaceutical products. And by the way, you may not negotiate with the manufacturer. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I have to cover the product, but I can't negotiate the price.
This is true of Medicaid, right?
Medicare. Yes.
That's right.
And the ACA as well. Yes. So,
how did that get to be law? I mean, why? That is so stupid.
Oh, well.
It's costing us billions of dollars as taxpayers. How did that? Well,
special interests, Steve. Yeah, special interests control that. And one of them was during a Republican presidency, another was during a Democratic presidency. To get something through, you have to compromise. It's a compromise. Nobody likes a compromise.
Well,
but
there
are things we can do. And Senator Sanders had some excellent ideas. Basically, his idea was the same as President Trump's, and that is going to make a deal with the pharmaceutical manufacturers. The difference, I think, is that Senator Sanders actually had some ammunition he figured he could use. And I'm not sure President Trump really understood how it is that he had a position of strength that he could use. Senator Sanders had it on his website. And it's an interesting idea. It's received quite a bit of attention since then. Hardly any prior to Senator Sanders discussing it. And it has to do with the patent laws and the ability of the United States of America to use an existing patent for the public benefit.
Oh. Explain that to us, because I don't think folks know about it. I think that, you know, the presidential race was all about President Trump had these wild declarations of cutting drug prices, which were very popular because we all want them cut. But he's done nothing, and I don't know that there's any content there. So what did the Sanders campaign, how would they approach this? I guess that's my question, Dave.
Okay, Senator Sanders actually had some facts to back up his rhetoric, as opposed to President Trump, who had more interesting rhetoric, but no facts to back it up. This is based on the websites. I mean, I don't know what was in the mind of either one of them, but there was a law, and some people who are listening are, if you're interested in writing this down, it's Title 28 of the United States Code, 28 U.S.C. 1498. So just Google that, 28 U.S.C. 1498. And what that says is, that's in the patent laws of the United States of America, and what it says is, if there is an existing patent and the United States of America needs to use it for the public benefit, the United States may do that, but they have to compensate the patent holder a reasonable and complete amount of money. Now, that's used by the Department of Defense all the time.
Well, this is really, really important. This is an old patent rule law. And what it means is that if somebody has jacked the price of a generic drug way, way high, the government then has the right to intervene for the American people and keep the price in some reasonable rate. I mean, they have to compensate the drug company, right? They have to let them make a profit. But these kind of astronomical things would be undercut. In other words, if we have a company that has one super overpriced drug, if we use the law just a few times, it would probably have an effect on the drug industry at large, maybe?
Absolutely. It's rarely used in pharmaceuticals. It was used during the anthrax scare, if you may remember, from 15 or so years ago, where there was a concern that we would all be poisoned by anthrax, which apparently is relatively easy to do. I don't know how the anthrax poisoners do it, but there's a drug that can effectively treat anthrax and prophylax for anthrax. And the government went to this to the company that held the patent, a process patent, and said, you know, we need to buy a lot of this drug. And the company said, whoa, you better dust off the checkbook because that's very expensive stuff. And the United States said, no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to use it. We're going to use your patent. And the way it works is the United States just takes it. Then there is a right to sue. The patent holder has a right to sue the United States of America, and the United States of America will have to pay a reasonable and complete amount of money to compensate for the profits that have been lost by the company. Well, in that case, the manufacturer said, oh, gosh, okay, if you're going to do that, let's sit down at the table and relatively quickly work out a deal.
Right.
So they made a deal. But the point is the United States was discussing this with the company from a position of strength rather than a position of weakness. And what Senator Sanders has said is, we can do this with other drugs as well. Now, the example he used was a drug that is, or several drugs that are effective for hepatitis C. And you've probably heard about that. I mean, hepatitis
they're
C.
Hugely, there are a whole bunch of new drugs, and they're hugely expensive and very effective, right?
They are hugely, exactly, hugely expensive, very effective. Mostly, this is getting in a little bit of social bias, but I don't mean this in an untoward way. Oftentimes needed by vulnerable people who are drug users or who are just not politically influential or wealthy, and who need help from the rest of us, from the United States. So, I mean, these drugs, they can cure hepatitis C in 12 weeks. As an alternative to using far less effective and more toxic drugs for the rest of your life and perhaps shortening your life. So it's a huge advance in drug therapy. Their cost initially was about $100,000 for 12 weeks of therapy. Because there are some competing, still patented drugs, the cost has come down to about $50,000, but it's still way beyond its super marginal pricing, we call it, way beyond the cost to produce these. And the drug company has recouped their investment hundreds of times, if not thousands of times over. So the United States could look at this based on the plan that Senator Sanders developed, should he have become president. The United States could say, we want this, we're taking it. We're going to take this patent, and we're going to compensate you a reasonable and complete amount of money. Nobody denies that the company is due a profit. They're just not due such an extreme profit that people can't get the drug. Now, the hedge fund managers look at this, and they say, whoa, you're taking away our billions of dollars in profit that we think we deserve on the backs of people who need the drugs. Senator Sanders disagrees. Reasonable
people would.
Well, unless you're a reasonable hedge fund manager, or unless, you know, Mike, it might be that the Arizona Teachers Retirement Fund has invested in the drug company, and they're saying, we got to pay these retired teachers their annuity. I mean, and grandma has invested in, these are publicly held companies, and they're supposed to make a profit. The question is, are they supposed to make such an unreasonably high profit? So Senator Sanders had this stick.
Okay, Dave, but
yeah.
The drug industry, as I understand it, we did some research and we had a program on it several years ago when we were doing influence peddling and stuff in Washington, has one of the strongest groups and most people in terms of trying to influence federal legislation. I mean, they have, I believe, several thousand people working in Washington trying to make sure that all the stuff that you're talking about doesn't happen. and there's lots of money. What could be done about that? I mean, it's I believe, and I've heard, now you can correct me, but I think the drug industry is probably the most profitable industry as a sector in the United States, and they're putting in a tremendous amount of money to make sure that they stay that way. And they give it to – they're one of these groups that give most of the money to the Republicans, you know, 80% to Republicans, but they spread enough around to Democrats to try to soften them up too.
Well, I don't have the exact numbers, but it's something like these drugs that I talked about, the Hep C drugs, were provided to between 2 and 3% of Medicaid patients because they're so expensive. So 97% of Medicaid patients who need them didn't get them. The idea is that that's a dead weight loss, a dead weight loss in the sense that drug companies, by pricing their drugs so high, are missing out on a huge amount of the market where they could derive a profit if the price were reduced. So the government says,
well, I think that's a great example. I mean, all they have to do is reduce the price and cover more people, right?
Well, all they have to do is that. I mean, it sets a precedent. A lot of people have wondered, why don't they do that? And I think part of the answer is nobody's forcing them to do it. The Bernie Sanders answer was, well, let's bring them to the table and let's show them the graphs that persuade them that we're willing to cover the other 97% of patients who are not getting it. Now, we'll buy that drug from you, but at a much lower price. But look. Look, if instead of our paying you tons of money for 3%, we'll pay you a reasonable amount of money for 100%, you're going to make more money. I mean, this just isn't the way they do it. They want to preserve the status quo. The status quo has been working very, very well for them. So when somebody proposes a change, they decide we're going to oppose it because they really don't know what the change means.
Wow, even though 97% of the people that need that drug aren't getting it.
And what their calculation, they care more about the principle that they're not interfered with, they could charge whatever they want, than they do the actual profit for a particular drug.
I think that's the point. Now, we can go beyond. We talked about the Hep C drugs, which are hugely expensive and are really a nice example but are sort of outliers. Most of the increase actually in 2014, 15, maybe even into 16, 2014 and 15, the increase in drug prices in the United States was due to these Hep C drugs that are so hugely expensive. So one approach is to deal with these special outlier drugs, but another approach is to look at all drugs, because although these are special outliers and egregious, all drugs are overpriced. And Senator Sanders was also talking about the expanding the authority of the Food and Drug Administration in their evaluation of drugs to consider the cost of them. Now, I know that seems a little far-fetched. I don't think it is.
What would it mean, Dave, as a practical thing?
What it would mean is that the Food and Drug Administration is currently authorized to approve a new drug and allow it to be marketed if it is safe and effective. There is no economic efficiency calculation that they are allowed to consider. So if they look at a drug and they decide, well, it's safe and it's effective, then regardless of what the price is, they approve it. And drugs stay on the market as long as they are safe and effective. They can be withdrawn from the market by the FDA when they cease to be safe and effective. The Senator Sanders' idea was, well, wait a minute. A drug may be safe and may be effective, but if nobody can afford it, it's not going to be very effective and it's not going to be very safe. Mm-hmm. So let's not ignore the reality.
Right.
That you're approving a drug as safe and effective that nobody can afford, or very few people can afford. Let's introduce into the calculation this real-world dynamic of economics. And we, again, as I said, we have pharmacoeconomists who spend their careers studying this. This is not something that's – this is not economic voodoo. These are people who actually can say, at a certain price, a drug will be safe and effective because people will actually afford it and use it.
Here, I want your opinion on this scenario. Mr. Dave Brushwood here, our pharmaceutical professor, is we're talking about Big Pharma this morning. Heart medications. I know someone that takes heart medications. All her heart medications cost $30 altogether, six or seven medications. One cost $283. So we're saying that to recover the cost of Agronox, which is some sort of fancy aspirin, that drug costs $300, where all her other heart medications together cost $6, $7, $8, $9, $12 for a month's supply.
Yeah, that's the plan, is what it is. That's the plan, which is there are plan sponsors that negotiate with prescription benefit management companies, PBMs, in order to provide pharmaceutical products to patients. Those negotiations are not transparent. I mean, we really don't know what it is that – so the example you've given, I can't really speak to. If it were a hypothetical, I could suggest that perhaps – what has happened is the PBM has cut a deal with a manufacturer, all of which is not open to public scrutiny. And the PBM has said, if you give us a better deal on your pharmaceutical, we will include it, but we'll charge patients more money. Wow. So the basic idea, I realize the pie in the sky idea is that prescription benefit management companies on behalf of the plan sponsors negotiate with pharmaceutical manufacturers. Now, the government can't do that, but independent businesses can. They don't get nearly as good a deal as Medicaid or the VA get.
Talking about things like Express Scripts.
Express Scripts, CVS, Caremark, those are the big ones. There are other smaller ones. Yes, these PBMs negotiate, and the pie-in-the-sky idea is – they negotiate on behalf of patients.
Right.
They try to reduce the drug cost for their enrollees or for the plan sponsors' enrollees. Express Scripts has no members. They are representing Blue Cross Blue Shield or Ford Motors or some other company that has engaged them to do this. We suspect the reality is that they enter into deals with manufacturers for their own profit rather than for the benefit of patients.
There's no supervision or oversight.
There needs to be transparency over those contracts, which currently there is not. There have been some efforts to create that. There is a federal preemption problem that gets in the way of states that have sought to improve the transparency. But getting back to Mike's example, that's the plan, is what that is. The reason five drugs cost $30 is because they have their tier one, which means that they have a low copay, and the other drug isn't covered, or for whatever reason a decision has been made not to have it subject to a copay.
And so, we don't know that because it's not a transparent system.
You cannot know that.
Can't know that.
And the decision that was made to engage this PBM in this way was made upstream from the downstream user.
Yeah. So we really can't see what's going on with drug pricing exactly. We have to come in from all kinds of external ways. In other words, we're not party, and probably will never be party to the negotiations with a company like Express Scripts, very, very large company, negotiates drug prices for themselves and their people that they represent.
Well, that's a decision that the government has made that they won't negotiate. So it's not like I'm taking issue with your phrase "will never be." This is a political decision that could be.
So Sanders' program, it had several points, Dave. I mean, I have to admit that I never saw it. I never focused on it. I heard his stuff on drugs as a kind of general thing. I didn't know it was this concrete and that he had actually come up with some mechanisms to reform the industry. I must admit my ignorance on this.
So the secret bullet here, the silver bullet, is the patent law. The other silver bullet. We're moving to the bottom line here. Just for fun. That patent law that you mentioned is an ace in the hole for the people. And the single payer plan is an ace in the hole for the people, for those people. Now the idea that people in Sedona are suffering, let alone dying, for lack of medication. Am I exaggerating?
People go to Mexico, Mike. I know people who go to Mexico to buy the drugs because they're cheaper. They go to Mexico to have their teeth fixed. They go to Mexico to have all kinds of medical procedures. When you get to Europe, if folks have traveled to Europe and anything bad happens, you'll find out that you have, even when you're not, say, included in the medical system, the single-payer medical system, you'll find everything is extraordinarily cheaper over there. Compared to the United States, I mean, we're trying to cover people with Medicare and Medicaid, and we're paying just such exorbitant prices to do it, Dave. So what is there? There's not a single solution, right? It's a whole series of things that need to be done to get this thing so it's more reasonable.
Well, there isn't a single solution. You're right. There are multiple problems, but using the authority in the patent laws that the United States of America, we the people, already have is part of the solution. That's not something that requires new legislation. Now, the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution has a takings clause. You can't take property away from a citizen of the United States without just compensation. And intellectual property is property.
It's like eminent domain. We need to put a highway through here to get from one
town
to another.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's not like eminent domain. It is eminent domain. That's exactly what it is. See, the public, we the people, need to put a highway through here because it's for the benefit of all of us to have that highway. You own some property. We're going to take that property from you, but we're going to give you just compensation for it. It's the same. It's exactly the same. That's what it's called, actually. And it's the same thing. Senator Sanders... I don't know who told him about this or who told his staff about it, but it's well known. We just have to have the will to use this mechanism. I'm not sure President Trump wouldn't use it if he were given the opportunity to do it. Tom Price, I don't think, is going to whisper in his ear and tell him about it, although I imagine...
I don't think so, no.
I imagine Tom Price knows about it and could do that. What we need is somebody... Well, I mean, we need to be electing representatives of us in the United States Congress who have a specific plan, who don't just talk pie in the sky about how we need to lower drug prices, but have a specific plan. Bernie Sanders was such a person.
Are there specific drugs that are, besides the Hep C, we talked about that, what other huge offenders are there out there that are just...
Yeah, I just don't feel comfortable talking about specific drugs. So other than the Hep C, which is just widely known, I will say this: they're all overpriced.
Okay,
there we go.
That makes it easy.
Generic drugs are overpriced, and the patented drugs are also overpriced. They're just overpriced by different mechanisms.
They're all overpriced, and we have the ability to reduce the prices if only we had the will to do it. Which I think if people understood the challenges and the opportunities we have, we could find. We could find the will to do that. And I think pharma as a representative of the pharmaceutical industry wouldn't object to a lot of these efforts the United States would make to benefit the public. They have thrown away Martin Shkreli. I mean, they have abandoned him. And the other hedge fund managers who make the pharmaceutical industry look really bad by buying these single source generics and increasing the price thousands fold, they are throwing them away. Pharma has said we want to have nothing to do with those people. Pharma does have an ethic. I mean, they are good people. They just want to make a profit the way everyone wants to make a profit.
A couple of decades ago, we did audiovisual shows for the largest drug makers in New Jersey, and we did it mostly for their sales staff. And I don't know what's happened in now in terms of some more regulation. But in those days, they were spending hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to psych up and organize their sales staff. We don't think of drug companies as being organized sort of like General Mills is to get their products on the shelf, but it sort of is.
Yeah, well, the cruises to nowhere have evaporated. The lavish dinners with as much as you want to drink don't occur anymore. And I think pharma is happy about that. I mean, they don't have to spend their money on these bogus pseudoscientific discussions with healthcare professionals. Now, what they continue to do is send their sales force, and so we have sales representatives and then medical science liaisons, MSLs. MSLs are PharmDs, doctors of pharmacy. They are MDs. They are PhDs. And they go into a doctor's office and they discuss, based on their clinical expertise and the scientific information they have, the value of the drugs that their company provides, and at least from their perspective, the preferability of them to the alternatives that exist within a class of drugs. Hardly ever do we not have several options available, some of which are considered more beneficial than others, and it's their job to promote those. Now, everybody does advertising. You see on TV the direct-to-consumer advertising.
Think about that, about advertising on TV. They're creating a demand. They're basically telling you, go and tell your doctor that you want drug X. And maybe drug X is a lot more expensive than drug Y.
I have a rule never to use any drug that's advertised on television. It's because they advertise the worst, it seems like.
Well,
and, once again, you're,
I hope you never have a disease that requires the use of one of those drugs, or if you do, you'll change that rule, because some of the drugs are good drugs despite the obnoxiousness of the advertisements for them. I think the drug companies would love to go back to days gone by when they didn't have to spend enormous amounts of money on direct-to-consumer advertising.
Oh, somebody's twisting their arm to spend enormous amounts of money on this?
Yeah, I mean,
so they may say advertise Lunesta 20 times an hour.
If the other guy does it, then I have to do it too, or I lose market share.
That's benefiting television commercial people who make television commercial and the television companies, et cetera, et cetera. But there's not really a benefit otherwise, right? It's just kind of, I guess you'd call it lost resources, because they spend so many thousands of dollars of competing with each other, but not on a basis that's really helpful to the patients.
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's like negative campaign ads. A candidate says, I'm not going to run negative ads. And then the other candidates say, well, we're going to. And the candidate who has made this pledge not to realizes, gosh, look at this. My polling looks awful. I better start trashing everyone else the way my competitors are. And the TV stations make tons of money. The radio stations get rich. But the social good is nowhere to be found. It's the same kind of thing. So direct-to-consumer advertising, since we have a First Amendment in the United States of America, and since we have freedom of speech, we can't really tell people that they can't say that their product is a beneficial product and leave it to people to decide whether – to patients to decide whether they want to ask their doctor if they can try it.
But at one time, they didn't advertise drugs except for things like different brands of aspirin who maybe were all the same but advertised as if there was a big difference between them. But did the rules change? Is that what we entered? Or did it just – did they realize that this could happen, and so then it opened the floodgates to advertising to people rather than to doctors?
That was what happened. Boots first advertised ibuprofen, which Motrin, and people sort of looked askance at it and thought, I wonder what's going to happen. What will the FDA do? And the FDA did nothing. So the competitors decided, well, we'd better get in the game here. If they're going to do this, we better get in the game. So direct-to-consumer advertising just sort of evolved. The custom had been not to engage in direct-to-consumer advertising, but there was never any real law that said you couldn't. And then we have the Constitution of the United States of America to deal with. And I think the FDA and the Congress decided, you know, we're not going to be able to restrict that commercial speech. They have a right to it.
But we can't let
this show end without talking about CEO pay of pharmaceutical companies. You know, we're talking about the cost of drugs, and I'm not against reasonable profit here. And, you know, we're talking all sorts of socialistic and communistic things here on this commie show that you guys have. But the truth is, $17 million for the CEO of pharma in salary and stock options. I think the budget of Sedona High School is like $15 million. So they run the high school for a year, everybody in it. And this one guy goes home with this this chunk of change.
It's a hugely profitable industry. We don't care whether it's profitable or not, as long as that's delivering for the American people. What we don't want to see is absolutely huge profits that don't benefit consumers, citizens, and people who are ill. We want a system.
The whole state of Arizona runs on $10 billion, and I just said $140 billion for Pfizer. On a yearly basis.
Well, people are becoming ill and remaining ill and dying because they can't get medicine because they can't afford it or because their plans don't cover it or for whatever reason the medication is so overpriced that they can't get it. Or if they can get it, they use it in suboptimal ways, like splitting a tablet, taking half a tablet a day rather than a full tablet a day, and their condition worsens. So they end up in the emergency department. The reason they die or their illness progresses farther than it should is they can't get their medicine because they can't afford it. So it's a public good. We need to do a better job. We can. There are mechanisms to do this. President Trump is right. What we need to do, we, the people of the United States of America, need to do is sit down with the drug companies and make a deal.
Make a deal.
We need to make a deal. You're right. This is what Senator Sanders proposed be done. Let's make a deal. Let's sit down at the kitchen table and make a deal, and in 45 minutes, we've hammered it out. I think it could be done. But you have to have the stick with you. You can't just say, would you please, oh, please, oh, please reduce your prices. That isn't going to work.
So if there is a bottom line, and we have a few announcements for the show. If there is a bottom line, Dave, I know we didn't give you a lot of time in the last show on opioids. What's the fundamental problem here? And I think you've addressed the solution. You have 2 minutes and or 1 minute and 30 seconds. Sorry.
Well, I had decided that I wanted to provide some advice. And first of all, vote for candidates who have a specific plan for negotiating with the pharmaceutical manufacturers. Figure out what that plan is.
Keyword negotiating.
Negotiate with them. And so vote for the right candidates. Don't just accept I'm going to do this at face value. Look at the facts. Secondly, if you get in a position where you need a drug that's so expensive you can't afford it, do research and find out, are there alternatives? Go online. Go to a patient blog. Talk to your pharmacist. Talk to your doctor. Investigate pharmaceutical assistance programs that may be available through the pharmaceutical manufacturer. And finally, go to your county health department and find out there whether they have any ideas of ways for you to get the drug so that it's in an affordable manner.
Excellent advice. And don't forget, you can find that on our website, vvid.org. This will be printed there, and the podcast will be on there. But we want to talk to you quickly about League of Women Voters doing candidate boot camp Wednesday, starting May 3rd, this Wednesday, May 3rd, 10th, and 17th. This is a great thing, whether you ever thought about running for office or even if you just want to know more about it. Look into the League of Women Voters Candidate Boot Camp. You can contact Barbara Luttrell at 649-0135. Please thank our friends over at Democrats of the Red Rocks for the support of Democratic Perspective. And hey, Steve Segner will be there for breakfast in a little while. We want to mention El Portal, another big supporter of Democratic Perspective. Thank you.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.